You're listening to Fanboy Versus with your hosts, JD Church, Chris McFeely, Chris Triplett, and Brian Kilby.
And you are listening to Fanboy Versus. I'm your host, JD. With me, I have Chris Triplett, Chris McFeely, Brian Kilby, and XV.
Who is also a Chris, just to keep up the theme.
Yes, so it's awesome. Three Chris's.
We're taking over the Brian. Show. Yeah. And we're going to rename it Three Chris's.
No, yeah. You're not.
Three Chris's okay. And some fat dudes.
If we get Fort Mac on here, we could have four Chris's.
Oh, nice. My God. Overload. So, this week, it is Fanboy Versus Apocalypse, as we will finally get to our review of Batman Superman Apocalypse. Yay. But first, we have news. Sort of news. Not a lot of news, but some news.
The best news, I think.
I think it is good news. I hope so. McFeely, what's the word?
Well, there's a couple of bits of news, but if you're talking about the best news, then I assume you're referring to DC's announcement this week that they're going to be dropping prices on all their books. Any books that are at $3.99 will be back down to $2.99. And that includes books that currently have second features, but they will be losing their second features. I don't know that anybody will be weeping over the loss of the second features.
So how long will it until they're back to $1.25?
It's...
Oh, get your time machine.
Go back to 1991.
Go back to 91.
Okay. But to continue it looks like Marvel's going to be doing something similar, right?
Sort of.
In a move that was not at all bandwagon jumpy, and to prevent them from being on the back foot going into New York Comic Con, Marvel announced less than an hour later that they too would not be launching any new comics at $3.99 as of January.
Yeah.
Infinitely less committal statement there.
Yeah, so no new... which I don't know though. For Marvel, I mean they sneeze new comics every week. So,
that's true.
You know. So
at least now the mini series will be at $3. Thank God.
That's what I would. Just belched right live on telly there. I wonder if they will be applying it to minis because to be fair. It's not really fair, but I'll be anyway. Marvel's minis, $3.99 has been the standard for them for a lot longer than the ongoings. But I mean, we do even still have new ongoings launching at $2.99. But you know, you wonder how long this new Abnett and Lanning Heroes for Hire series is going to be for the world if it was to launch at $3.99.
Well, that's a good
point. Which it is because it launches before this promised cut.
But how many primary lines of anything are running it? At $2.99, isn't it mostly the limited runs or special runs that are running at the $3.99, even on DC side?
On Marvel's side, you've got all the Avengers books. Uncanny X-Men just took the leap. Spider-Man's going $3.99 when it comes down to twice a month. And then you've got Cap Thor's. Thor's just made the leap. Captain America, but he's got a Bucky backup. The Max books are all $3.99.
Basically, everything I buy from Marvel is $3.99 now.
Yeah, side of it. As far as DC, though, aren't most of their...
Yes, in DC's case, it's nearly all double extra... It's the only books that are $3.99 that... Okay, hang on. The only books that are $3.99 that aren't ones with second features are Emerald Warriors and... Inc. Batman Inc. and Batman the Dark Knight were going to launch at $3.99, but no, I believe are not.
Yeah, that's good.
Monsters right now is
that might hit.
What about the team books like the JLA and JSA? They don't have backups, do they?
JLA is $3.99 actually, but I don't care about JLA so hard as I could. I couldn't even tell you if it actually has a second feature or any extra content.
I'm trying to remember the last time JLA was worth buying, and I really can't. I don't know if it's been this decade.
The only thing that makes it worthwhile right now is it's running the Jade line, isn't it? There isn't.
Maybe. Jade. I buy the book, but I have no idea.
I think. I want to say so, but I don't know that for certain. So,
James Robinson still writes it. I can tell you that.
Yeah. Well, he does, doesn't he? Yeah. So, XV, are you enjoying Dark Designs back there?
Yes. Thank you.
At least you're reading something comic related.
He's just here for later, folks.
Right. This is just, yeah. He's just window dressings for the moment. So what are
the other part of this news, though, actually, is that one thing DC is making a concession in this regard is that comics will now be only 20 pages instead of 22.
Ooh.
Oh. Losing pages.
Price cut is, the page cut is happening to accommodate the price cut.
That's
no word on that from Marvel, but then Marvel have made a lot of noise without really saying anything thus far.
Yeah. So will it be reduced to 20 pages plus add like 5 extra pages of ads?
Probably just replace the 2 pages with 2 pages of ads.
There you go.
There you go.
Yeah, that's probably so. Okay, and then other news? Any other news?
Yes, the other news, we were supposed to be talking about it last week because it's old news now at this point, but we definitely have to comment on it, is that Bob Harris was announced as the new editor-in-chief of DC last week.
Did he even work for DC?
He was running their trade paperback, their collections department.
That's weird.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that means like DC Comics are going to be a lot like Marvel Comics in the 90s now, right?
Well, you see. Well, I think first and foremost, this answers the question that we were asking.
Hologram covers all around.
That would be awesome.
Well, no, to be fair, Harris became editor in 95? Yeah, 95, which was after the worst of that.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, a lot of history, the circumstances of the time wind up with a lot of fingers pointed at Harris. You know, it was under Harris's watch that Onslaught happened. It was under his time that Marvel went bankrupt, but that wasn't his fault. The company was already in the decline. The whole industry was already in the decline. Marvel went bankrupt because a corporate raider bought them into debt during the brief time that he owned it, you know? He left under, I can't remember what comic it was. Was it Earth X, I think? That an issue that the inker slipped like a profane message about his departure into the background artwork?
Really?
No.
I think so.
It says something like, good riddance, Harris, you were a miserable SOB anyway, or something like that, hidden in the background somewhere.
That's awesome.
I'm going to have to look that up. I should have researched that before the show, but I'm pretty sure it's there somewhere. If anybody in the listening audience can confirm while we're live.
Nice.
But then, you know, at the same time, you know, Bob Harris is also the man. The Age of Apocalypse happened under his watch. Heroes Return happened under his watch. He gave us Busick and Perez on the Avengers. You know, good things also happened under his time as well.
Did you say Heroes Return? Oh, yeah, that's right.
That's not Reborn. Return. I mean, Reborn happened under his watch as well, but that was a money saving.
Hey, I was going to say, that seemed to be at the same time. So
wax on, wax off, give with one hand, take with the other. But, yeah. We shall see. I mean, it bears. I mean, yeah, he was the one who, yes, Bob Harris was the one who ended the Clone Saga. Bob Harris was the one who brought Norman Osborn back to life. It goes with one hand, it goes with the other.
Yeah. Well, we'll see where that goes then. So,
if it means Jeff Johns writes more comics, I say good.
Yeah.
I mean, it answers the question we were asking whenever Johns got his promotion, like, is this chief creative director, is this a new phrase for editor-in-chief? And hey, apparently it's not. If it means Ditko is less involved and Johns gets the time to write more comics, I'm all for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be good. So, hey... by the way, so in case you didn't notice, we didn't have a show last week. It was sort of a light week, and
you weren't there.
I was on vacation, so
told them you were sick.
Feely died.
Yeah,
I was deathly ill.
Yeah,
there was a lot of illness, work in general, preoccupation.
Yeah, illness and vacation, so that's fine. So we'll kind of get caught up on some of our interesting things from last week and then this week as well. So all of us will be doing that individually. And
just before we do that, I see Golden Vixie in the live chat there has highlighted the fact that one of the few announcements worth reporting out of New York is that IDW is to bring back the Transformers Spotlight series.
Yes,
that's really more for Radio Free Cybertron, but I just didn't want him to think we were ignoring him.
Well, it's not that we wouldn't read that kind of stuff on this show. It's just that generally it's not good. So we don't typically talk about it because we're not.
I don't know. I think the infestation thing is worth talking about.
Is that like the zombie?
That's the zombie thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, for all the non-Transformers fans in the listening audience, that is a Transformers, G.I. Joe, Ghostbusters, and Star...
Oh, dear.
Uh-oh. We lost McFeely.
Did we lose him?
Yep.
Oh, that right, awesome, awesome story killed him somehow.
I know. Apparently that was a secret that he shouldn't be talking about.
Yes.
Yeah.
So...
He's back.
My battery died.
Uh-oh.
Oh.
It's cool. I turned the switch. What did I say? What did I leave on?
You were talking about infestation.
Yes, it's a Transformers, G.I. Joe, Star Trek, and Ghostbusters crossover with zombies.
My God.
Wow. That sounds like a Metal Hawk guy's fanfic.
Okay, IDW also has Doctor Who. Why isn't Doctor Who in there somewhere?
Because then it really would be...
Then it really would be Metal Hawk guys.
What the hell, man?
Wow. Well, that's
not working.
I don't even know what to say. Wow. Anyway, so comics came out. Brian, did you read stuff?
We're holding off on Blackest Night, correct? Or Brightest Day. Okay.
Yeah, Brightest Day is going to be the end. Although you wouldn't be.
Yeah, I wouldn't. I'm not far off. Yeah.
Blackest Night. So.
Wait! Don't spoil the story.
Well, I will spoil one thing. It was actually pretty good. So.
Sure.
So, I caught up on Amazing Spider-Man. That's basically it. Origin of the Species is the story arc that they're currently in. Lily, who was Harry Osborn's girlfriend, and
Menace.
Yeah, she. I'm getting there, Chris. Lily, who was Harry Osborn's girlfriend, and also Norman Osborn's girlfriend, who ended up taking some of the Goblin serum stuff and inherited the powers, the Green Goblin, ended up becoming pregnant by Norman, and she. Yeah. So she popped up in the beginning of the story arc, had the baby in the coffee shop, which is kind of creepy.
Well, you know, technically, you know, Doc Ock took it out of her, I think is what he did.
Oh, it was even creepier.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Doc Ock forcibly took it from her, and he's wanting this child, and he's pitting all of the Spider-Man's basically gallery against him. For what I don't know I don't know the purpose exactly. I have some ideas, but it's basically been Spider-Man holding a kid running through New York for the last three issues, and then this issue it's really no different. I mean, basically the three last issues, the only difference between them is the artist doing the book. Mark Waid's writing it, and like any other Mark Waid story, it's enjoyable. But until we actually see what the point of it is, I'm going to withhold, you know, judgment. I'm betting that because Doc Ock's body is so screwed up, he's probably going to try to use the child as some sort of host or something, because the child almost certainly has, you know, enhanced strength and power due to the Goblin serum. So, but it's like I said, I'm really going to withhold judgment on the story as a whole until it resolves itself. It's not bad. It's worth reading.
It's better than Omit.
Yeah.
God, it's better than Omit.
So, yeah.
The eye is better than Omit.
Yeah. Well, I liked that Rhino showed up.
Yes, and
that was a good page. I liked that.
That was a good page, and he was going to. He doesn't give a crap about the kid. He just wanted to beat the crap out of Spider-Man. But
yeah, he's not there to get the kid. He just wants to kill Spider-Man for his ordeal in the Gauntlet.
Yeah, and Spider-Man reasons with him, it's really good. And I'm like, wow, Rhino doesn't suck anymore.
Wait, he's actually interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I can't remember a point in my life when Rhino didn't suck. What, McFeely?
I could never have predicted it. You know, yeah,
I know.
Rhino not sucking.
So
it's Rhino, he runs around and he runs into things and that's it.
That's it, yeah. But, yeah, I'm really looking forward to see where this goes, because that will completely determine my opinion of the story. Usually, like with the... like with the last or the Grim Hunt storyline, I liked it all the way through. I mean, it kept building towards something. This is basically the same issue over and over, but it's not bad.
Like, at the end of this issue, not to spoil what happens at the end, you didn't feel like some stuff's going to go down in the next issue, and you didn't like think, well, you know, actually can't wait for the next issue, because I thought that was pretty cool. I mean, you Spidey running off, and again, not to spoil it, but.
Well, this is a comic book review show, so spoil it. So at the end, Harry Osborn runs up, says, "Hey, he's my brother. I want to help." Spider-Man runs away, holding something that looks like the baby, and you find out
Spidey's been running through the whole story with the baby. The baby's been in danger for that's three issues.
Yeah.
He's got to get him somewhere, so it makes sense that his brother, you know, could maybe get him somewhere, and then maybe he can lure the villains away because they'll still think Spidey still got the kid.
Yeah, and it turns out that Terry was actually the Chameleon.
But more than that, he tells him when he comes back to check on him to find out why he hasn't run away, he tries to tell Spidey that the baby died.
Yeah.
And Spidey runs off crazy saying, you know, "I'm sick of all this, and I'm coming after, you know, Doc Ock."
Yeah. So, we'll see.
Wow. I thought it was cool. I liked it. I thought it was cool. Sets it up. I want to read the next issue.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good. Read it. I don't love it or anything.
Not like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's no any other Amazing Spider-Man except for Omit of late, you know.
Yeah. I mean, it's not as good as, say, Grim Hunt, but infinitely better than One Moment in Time.
Yeah. I mean, I think we're all enjoying it a little more because it's not One Moment in Time.
Yes. Actually, if Marvel was smart, like every year and a half, they would make another One Moment in Time just to make the rest of the book look better.
Since
pretty good idea, actually.
Since we are talking Spider-Man, I do have to say that I did get retweeted by Dan Slott this past week. So
I saw that.
Yeah.
What was that about?
And that, it's kind of a newsy bit. There was the first teaser poster, I guess, the first full teaser poster for Big Time that was released. And on the one that the Dan Slott had put on his Twitter feed, it showed Reed and Sue. And so I tweeted a question to Dan saying, "So does this mean that neither Reed nor Sue are going to die as a part of three?" And he tweeted back and said, you know, of course, broadcasting and saying, "Nope, there's going to be another version of the poster that has Ben and Johnny on it." So,
yeah, one more thing. While we're talking about Spider-Man, we got news that Emma Stone's going to be playing Mary Jane in the upcoming
Gwen Stacy.
Nope, Gwen Stacy.
She's playing Gwen Stacy.
You brought it up
released. It's actually Gwen Stacy.
Yeah, there was like a 2 days worth of controversy there because it was a question of whether or not.
Yeah, I think Marvel like posted it then, and then they say like we were announcing that, you know, she's accepted the role of Gwen Stacy or something. I read that somewhere. I'm not sure where.
Interesting. That's good. That's good.
Yeah, yeah, it got screwed up initially, but yeah, it is apparently going to be.
I'm really looking forward to the new Spider-Man movie because, you know, it has to be better than the first Spider-Man movie.
It'll almost most likely be better than the musical. So
yes,
I hope so.
I hope, you know, the big problem, and I had a conversation with a couple people on Twitter with this. The big problem with the Spider-Man movies is they're not funny. You know, when you have a character who's one of the core traits of the character is that he's funny.
He's not funny. That's the thing. He tells terrible jokes.
I laugh out loud.
When has Spidey ever told a good joke? They're always bad jokes. He thinks they're funny and other people don't get them. That's basically the character of Spidey.
Yeah, Chris, but I think you're missing the point. The book is funny. Spider-Man is funny. I literally laugh.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying.
It's funny in context of the character. It's like Stan Laurel. You know, if you didn't know that, Laurel and Hardy were supposed to be funny, you would never laugh at them. But in context of their humor, you know, they're funny. So, yeah, I mean, but for a character who's supposed to have a sense of humor, he never makes a joke. And
no, that's the big problem. I mean, it's the one thing that the Raimi movies are really, really missed out on. Really missed the boat. Huh?
Yeah, it was more power and responsibility, less, you know, having fun.
Yeah. And Spider-Man 2 is fantastic, but it's fantastic in spite of itself. So, you know, the first one, it's okay. Third one sucks hardcore. Second one's...
Yeah, the ironic thing is the third one is the funniest. Yeah,
that is true. You're right. That is true. You're absolutely right. But, yeah, so that's good news. I have high hopes for the new movie. And like Triple and I were talking, I'm really hoping that there's no frickin' organic web shooters.
Yeah, I don't want that. And I also don't want, like, him fighting some made-up, you know, villain that's not in the comics or, you know, something stupid.
I don't care. I just want it to be good. I don't care who the villain is.
Yeah.
Well, really. I don't care about organic web shooters.
I do.
To be frank,
I do.
It didn't. I thought it would bother me more than it did. Like it bothered me the first time I watched it, and then after that, it was like, oh, I don't care because
I mean, it doesn't matter so much in the Raimi movies because they don't really, you know, beat you over the head over it. Like in the first movie, okay, he's got it, but then like in the second movie, they don't really beat you over the head with it.
Yeah.
He just has them, but it makes for an interesting. Thing that you can use in stories, like when they did Brand New Day.
Oh yeah,
they first started one of the first stories. He loses one of his web shooters, and he's trying to locate it.
I love that
so
much.
It was awesome. It was a good story.
It was absolutely awesome.
Yeah, man, that's the plot to hang a 3-hour film on.
No. That's
the case of the lost web shooter.
Yeah.
No.
And I just always love the issues where like he's like down on his luck. He has no money, and he runs out of webs to shoot, and then he basically has to still find a way to beat Mysterio.
Yeah, I mean it's like. In the Spider-Man movies, if he ran out of web shooters, he just needs to go eat some Twinkies or something. That's not as fun.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry. Go ahead.
That's okay. Cool. So Triplet.
Yep.
Give it to us. Sock it to us, if you will.
Oh no.
Well, we already talked Amazing Spider-Man.
Okay, never mind.
We already talked Amazing Spider-Man, so I'll skip that. And we're gonna save Brightest Day, so I'll skip that.
Do you have anything left?
Yeah. I read Action Comics 893, Wonder Woman 603, and Buffy number. I don't even know what it is now. Where is the number on these stupid things? Who cares? It's the new issue of Buffy Comics. But of the three, easily I think I most enjoyed Action Comics. And again, this is now Lex Luthor's Action Comics. You know, no Superman. You know, Superman's off, I don't know, walking around like, you know, Kane from Kung Fu in his book now.
No Superman. That sounds really great. DC should just do that.
So you've already got, like, you're already giving this, like, 3 stars when I said no Superman, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. But
starts from
this...
a 5-star rating and just deducts points for everything he doesn't like.
But, you know, I don't want to go into, like, you know, super detail on the book. Basically, it's just continuing that story where Lex, you know, got a taste of power, you know, back during Blackest Night. And now he's trying to reclaim, you know, that power that was taken from the power from the rings, the, you know, Black Lantern powers and all that stuff. He's trying to, you know, recapture that, and he thinks he's found it. In the last couple of issues, he keeps finding locations where I guess like some of this power's still located, I guess, or still at on Earth, just, you know, like just general locations, like in a, like, you know, a jungle or in Antarctica or something like that. Well, in this issue, he's actually going into a jungle, and this issue it's as you can tell from the cover, it's got Gorilla Grodd in it, and I mean, they're basically still just looking for the power. You know, he's still got that storyline kind of going with he's got like a robot Lois Lane, which is just beyond weird, but I think is very awesome. She's the only person that he'll ever let talk to him, like, you know, in a bad way, like say, okay, you're doing something wrong or anything, because everybody else he'll just say, have them killed. But if Lois Lane says, hey, you know, you need to rethink what you're doing, he'll actually listen to her, and she's a robot Lois Lane.
That's so awesome. It is awesome.
But in the issue, basically, he's going into this jungle that, you know, Gorilla Grodd's located in, and he's watching him, and Gorilla Grodd has his you know, brain controlled, you know, gorillas or something kidnap Lois because he can't tell that Lois is a robot. You know, Lex has done something to her where he just doesn't know that she's a robot, and I don't know if this is something that's happened in previous. Other comics, Flash or Teen Titans or wherever Gorilla Grodd's been lately, but apparently he's eating brains now.
Yeah, he likes brains.
I mean, has he done that before? Because I can't
remember. I've heard it. I don't remember him ever doing it, but I remember him threatening it.
He's got like a room full of brains, and he thinks like when he eats them that he'll, you know, increase his intelligence and he'll learn, you know, what the brain, you know, like there's like this guy
that does work. That does work.
Lex Luthor sends this guy into the jungle early on to, you know, just kind of like, you know, get the lay of the land. And Grodd, you know, he kills him and keeps his brain. And when Lex Luthor shows up at the jungle, you know, he decides that's, you know, the time to eat the brain, and he eats it. And now he knows why Lex Luthor is there. He knows what he's looking for. And like I was saying, when he kidnaps Lois, he thinks that he can do the same thing to Lois, and he chomps down on her head. And with her head like in his mouth, she's like, "Hey," and he says, "An android." But the perfume, but for the perfume, I would have never realized. That odor is extraordinary. It will take me days to be free of it. And she says, "I guess Lex doesn't like to be reminded of, you know, my old gears and wheels and whatnot." Oh, which I'm, I don't know what to think about that.
That sounds creepy.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's just like little things like that in the book, which is just awesome. And Grodd basically decides to, you know, just full on attack Lex, and in doing so, in a scene, he actually chops Lex's head off. You know, on the page and everything. And he picks his head up and says, "I got him, I beat him, you know, he's dead, you know, run, you pitiful humans," or something. And he sticks his head in his mouth, starts chewing on it. He goes, slightly metallic, a hint of a Lex, and then he gets, like, a shock out of him. It was a Lex robot. Because he knew Gorilla Grodd was going to do it. And there's just, like, crazy-ass stuff like this in the comic, and it's just, it's awesome. So he like, and then it shows where Lex is, like, meeting with the dude he sent into the jungle, that Lex Grodd originally killed and ate his brain, and he basically had fed this story to this dude so that when Grodd ate his brain, Grodd would think he had the upper hand on him, but it was always just a play so that Lex could kind of like, pull like a double cross on Grodd and get to the black green power that's in the middle of the jungle. So like while Grodd's eating the robot brain and getting a shock out of his life, you know, Lex is already in the middle of the jungle, dressed up as a gorilla, by the way. You know,
Jesus.
Wow.
The creepiest part of the issue, though, is when Lex pricks his finger and the Lois robot sucks on it for him.
Ew.
Nice.
Does that happen?
Yes, that happens.
Oh, my God. But, you know, just to kind of like skip to the end, which, you know, I think it's worth mentioning. At the end of the issue, Lex is leaving. He's got what he needs. Grodd's pissed off, so he decides he's not going to let Lex leave. And he actually shoots Lex. Lex falls out of, you know, his helicopter or whatever it is, and he actually does fall to his death, breaks his neck. And then we get what we all knew was going to happen, and Lex meets death. And that's the setup for the next issue.
Wow.
It was a good issue. I liked it. I mean, this has continued to be one of my favorite books, and it's sad, but okay, like a book without Superman about Lex Luthor and a robot Lois Lane is more entertaining than a man who can basically, you know, fly and do anything he wants to do. And maybe it's because man who can fly and do anything he wants to do is not doing that and just walking around.
Yeah, it's better than JMS.
It's never been that interesting anyway.
Screw you,
it's the same problem that I have with Superman, right? Because, oh, he's super. He can't be hurt. He can't be killed. Well, Lex can die, you know, and that's interesting. And even though he's dying, that can make for an interesting story because that character, you know, is sort of real. They can actually be harmed, actually be hurt.
Yeah, but it's a cool book. I think that everybody should at least try this book out and see if you like it, especially since, you know, it's going to be dropping in price. Right now it's $4, and but, you know, according to the news that we heard, eventually it's going to be $2.99, and I think it'd be an awesome book for $2.99. But, you know, when we were talking about part of the reason what DC is doing is dropping like the backup stories. I believe this may be the first issue that starts the new backup that was going to be in action, which was going to be about Jimmy Olsen. So I guess this is going to be a short-lived backup. Mm. But I believe this
it's finishing in a one-shot. It's getting.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So that's like a really unceremonious introduction for Smallville's Chloe.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. This is like the first, like we've been hearing for years and years that Chloe's going to finally show up in the regular DC comic universe, and she finally does, and it's in a backup for Jimmy Olsen, in a backup that's not going to be around that much longer.
Yeah.
So, Triplett, one thing, you said he meets Death.
Yeah.
So, when he meets Death, it's Death.
It's you know, what, Neil Gaiman's
Death. Yeah. That, okay. Right? Yeah. Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, because there's even a little funny little scene where he's like, he's looking at his body, looking down at his body, and he's looking around to see, you know, what's going on. And he goes around a corner, and Death goes, "Oh," and she's like, "Sorry, you scared me there for a second." You know, she was scared of Lex Luthor, just kind of startled her.
See, most, yeah, and, when I think of Death, typically I think of Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey Death. And,
right.
As far as I know, he's not going to play Clue, you know, with her. You know, and you'll sink my battleship. You know?
If anybody could beat Death at Clue, Lex Luthor could.
Yes, absolutely.
I would love to see
that happen now.
But yeah, the next issue should be good. I'm looking forward to it.
Best 2 out of 3.
Damn straight. Awesome movie. But yeah, good book. That's probably the best book that I read the last 2 weeks. Wonder Woman 603 probably was not the best book that I read.
Duh.
What can
Give
I say
us a
about
quick
it?
Rundown of what the heck's going on in that book right now.
Well, last issue, she basically saved one of the last groups of Amazonians from this this military group, which I'm not sure if they're part of the government or they're from some other organization. I have no idea what's going on. But basically, she found this group of Amazonians that weren't on Themyscira. They were, I think, maybe in Greece or something. I can't remember where they were located, but they were in a like a temple, and they were basically just praying, trying to, you know, do what, you know, priests do, I guess. I don't know. But she was trying to get them out so that they don't get killed, because these soldiers are going and killing all of them. They've already, like, killed her mother, and I mean, Themyscira, as far as I know, looks like it's been destroyed at this point. So she's kind of, like, walking them out of there, trying to save them. She runs into these creatures that are feeding on the dead, and she has a fight with them, and she winds up dying, and she goes to hell, and then she fights her way out of hell, and then she's back, and then they keep on walking, and she makes a deal with some soldier guys, and she winds up fighting some guy who's got her magical lasso, and I have no clue what's going on.
That still sounds more interesting than me actually sitting going and reading the book.
I mean, because
every time it comes out, I pick it up when it passes under my eyes, and I try to look at it and understand what the hell is going on in it, but I can't focus on that.
I mean, when they said Straczynski was going to be Wonder Woman, and that they were going to, like, you know, do like a good starting on, you know, jumping on point for people that haven't read it in years, because I loved Wonder Woman when Greg Rucka was doing
me
it.
Me too.
I thought it was a good book.
It was awesome.
I enjoyed it. It was awesome. And then when he left, I left. I didn't want to stick around, because when the new book came out, it just wasn't interesting. And
well,
I thought, okay.
Alan Heinberg's thing.
Yeah, I read a few issues, but I don't know, something about it. I think it was like the period where it's like, gotta drop some stuff. Books are too expensive. What am I not reading good? This book. And bye-bye. And then I always wanted to come back to Wonder Woman, and I thought, well, this is a good point to jump on, but it's not a very good book. I mean, I like the character. I really want to see good Wonder Woman stories, but we're not getting them. Maybe this will be good 10 issues in, but geez, by then, won't it be over?
So, I mean, do we go back to maybe it's just not an interesting character, or?
No, I think Wonder Woman can be an interesting character, because, like I said, when Greg Rucka was doing it, she was an interesting character. I liked her. I liked the stuff she did. She fought freaking Minotaurs in it, and Medusa. She got blinded in an issue, and for, I want to say, like, a couple of issues, maybe she was blind, and she still fought. I mean, she's a good character, an interesting character that you can do stuff with. They're just not doing it. I mean, she's a jacket and a new costume. That's all she is right now. I mean, she's just now getting her golden lasso, and looks like she's going to have to fight this dude for it. I don't know. I mean, I don't know who this dude is either. Maybe they've said, and I'm just dim-witted or something, but I have no clue. Yeah. So I'm not too happy with it. I don't know. Maybe I'll keep getting it. Maybe I won't. We'll see what happens.
Do we know what they're going to do? Because they did announce, there was, I guess, another piece was that they're announcing that there's going to be a live-action Wonder Woman series again.
Oh, that was the other
thing. Yeah, I heard about that.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Do we know? Do we have any details?
No.
So are they going to tie it to like, this? Or are they going to maybe try to tie it to something classic?
I haven't heard.
It's being done by David E. Kelly.
Yeah, I heard that. So it's going to be like Picket Fences.
Or Ally McBeal.
Yeah.
Or Ally McBeal. Plenty of dancing babies.
Oh, my God. So, yeah. Hopefully it won't be the new costume. Hopefully it'll be the original. So.
Yeah, but you know, it's also kind of sad. So I guess that means DC's given up all hope of trying to turn Wonder Woman into a movie now. You know,
probably so.
Yeah. Well, so in the last book that I had this week was the new issue of Buffy, which I have no idea what's going on in Buffy. I'm reading it. I'm paying attention, but like after like the end of the last season, because I think technically we're now in season 9. It says season 8, but it kind of had a hiatus.
I think this is supposed to be the finale.
The finale, okay, because we had like a big kind of ending type story where they kind of like resolve the whole Twilight thing. We find out who Twilight was.
What did you say resolved?
Well, they sort of did. I mean, they told us what was going on and why they were doing it.
Well,
and
you
made
say it. They told us. I read that issue, too. They didn't tell us jack squat. Giles sat around and said an awful lot of oblique phrases about destiny in the universe.
Yeah.
Not one damn thing was actually explained.
Well, now they're trying to
turn up with a fucking steam-powered frog robot or something.
the best part about that was like Spike showing up in like some steam-powered robot with a bunch of insects pawing in it, and them calling him like their master or something. Or sire. I can't remember what they call him in this issue.
What? Isn't this about vampires? What the hell is going on?
I know.
But it's just kind of awesome because, like, you know, Spike's there now. I guess, like, they're slowly moving everybody over since, you know, IDW is losing, you know, the Angel stuff. And eventually Angel's going to start having his own comic published by Dark Horse. I guess this is the slow grind moving those characters in. Because I haven't been reading any of the IDW stuff, so I have no clue. But I don't think that maybe Spike's been traveling through space in a, you know, steam powered spaceship with a bunch of, you know, cockroaches in the IDW book. I'm fairly certain that
if not, he oughta.
Yeah, but
it's about vampires. What?
Yeah, it's not Twilight like the crappy movies and books Twilight. It's actually pretty awesome.
It's what?
It's crazy as hell. But yeah, I have no idea what's going on. They're in this issue, it looks like they're going back to the Hellmouth. There's something there. There's like Spike explains it as a cork, and if the cork is pulled, all reality will cease to exist. And don't
so it's lost.
Don't let them pull the cork. And demons are coming over from all these other dimensions, and they're giant demons. And Angel is Superman now. He's flying around and saving, you know, kittens from burning houses. I don't know what's going on.
And the Master's on the cover.
And the Master's back, because apparently the Master is the protector of that thing that's in the Hellmouth. Because they go to, you know, to protect it, and he's maybe going to do something with it. I don't know what's going on. But I'm reading it. I'm still enjoying it. Maybe I'll eventually get an issue that explains all this. Probably not, but you know what? I'm a sucker. I'll keep buying the book. That's about
it. Okay. So, I take it that's everything then.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay. Wow. Okay, so last week, the search for Batman, Time Master's Vanishing Point. So far, I don't know what the hell this has to do with finding Batman. But things are happening. Now, again, we're kind of getting more of the story and relationship between Booster and Rip. You see another story from when Rip's a little bit older than the last time, where Booster's getting help from Brainiac 5 to, I think, mostly upgrade Skeets, and I think there was something else that he needed. And Rip's flying around the little laboratory with a JLA flight, or not JLA, the Legion flight ring. And it was sort of just a side comment, because Rip asks if he can keep the ring, and they said, nope, there was only one person outside of the Legion that we ever let have a flight ring. Hmm. That would be Booster, of course. But anyway, it was just kind of interesting the way he said it. The rest of this is total crap. There's some weird sorcerer guy on some alternate dimension that has an octopus brain reading thing. And he uses that to contact another sorceress on an alternate plane where Booster, Green Lantern, and Superman are, and uses that to suck them through a pool. And that's where that bit of the story ends. It's just a lot of fighting.
It's becoming harder and harder to be the book that is supposed to explain Batman the Return of Bruce Wayne when that book is not coming out.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, and this story is totally stagnating. I mean, nothing of interest happened between the last two issues. I mean, other than just a lot of fighting. But, I mean, as far as the main storyline involving the heroes, I would argue that nothing happened. I mean, essentially, it's just these two sorcerers that are teaming up, and now all of our heroes are going to be in the same place. But that doesn't mean that story-wise they're going to be any further along than they were when the story began. Now, the only other thing that makes it interesting, though, is the secondary story that's going on involving Black Beetle and his time bandit. I don't know what the hell you want to call these people. But it's, of course, Degaton, Despero, Black Beetle, and the Ultra Humanite. And Black Beetle surmises that that there are others that could help with the disruption of time, or at least finding Rip, and that on the largest chunk of what's left of Vanishing Point is most likely the prison where he had imprisoned members of the Linear Men. And they, of course, find the prison and tear it open. And inside are Matthew Rider and Leary Lee, which are, of course, parts of the Linear Men. Now, the only reason that that's of slight interest is because it's an alternate version of Rider that became Wave Rider. And there had been a mention, even a couple of years ago, that Wave Rider lives. So
you remember Wave Rider, right, kids? You loved him in the 90s.
You remember? He was a great character in the 90s.
I didn't know he was dead.
I loved him and all those annuals that he was in.
Yes.
Yeah. And he was sort of involved in the Return of Superman, but, you know.
Mr. Mind killed him in 52.
Ah, gotcha.
Yeah.
How did Mr. Mind kill anyone?
He took over Skeets.
Okay. So you put Mr. Mind and Skeets together and it's unstoppable.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. So anyway, that's that was the most interesting thing to me of the whole bit, and that doesn't really say a lot. So yeah. But hey, I'm still reading this because it's at least some Booster. And I like the actually opening stories better. I kinda like the stories where you get to see Booster as a father and seeing him sort of raising a young Rip Hunter. So anyway, that's exciting. We'll see where that goes. And yay, maybe that'll be $2.99 instead of $3.
That'll be over before that happens.
Yeah, it's, well, this is 3 of 6, so yeah, I guess it'll be about time for that to end. And then I'm gonna go ahead and talk about Secret Six.
Feel free.
So when last we left our villains, they were split into two teams. One that's trying to take over this weird parallel island native people thing, and the other that's trying to kill the first team. And, yeah.
Wow.
Bane kills a bunch of people right off the bat. And any comic that you open up where Bane is hacking people's arms off and stuff...
That's good stuff.
That's good
with
stuff.
A battle axe.
With a battle axe. With a double-bladed battle axe.
Man, I need to get caught up on Secret Six.
No regard for sex either. Decapitates one woman, cuts another one's arm off. Just merciless. And, basically tells them, to surrender. And they say that they're going to bring their army. And, oops, they've got their own army. Because, of course, Bane's group is... Who is the girl with the white mask?
I don't know who she is, but she's Lady Vic.
Lady Vic. So there you go. Anyway. And they have Gigantia and Dwarfstar, which is sort of funny to have on the same team. But anyway. So then there was a secondary story where there seems to be involving Amanda Waller, where apparently...
Well, this issue is following through on that non-linear... So evidently, yeah, that issue we had with the last issue, where things seem to be presented in a different order, was indeed a definite storytelling choice, because... We have another example of it with this issue, because this next panel, lacking the usual Jeff Loeb-styled then and now captions to tell us whether we're looking at the past or the future. If I'm reading this right, this is from a while ago, and this was Waller finding out that Spy Smasher here was planning to send Bane 6 in and deciding upon learning this to get the other 6 to go after them.
Right. So this is that covered it.
That.
I was going to try to add to that, and I'm like, nope, that's pretty much it. Okay.
We find out for sure in this issue that it didn't even occur to me last issue, but we find out for sure at the start of this one that this is this prehistoric world is Skartaris of the Warlord comics.
Ooh.
Oh, that doesn't mean anything to me.
Justice League Unlimited episode where they went there.
He's the guy with the white hair.
Yeah, that's, I missed that one.
The funny hat. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So, and then of course we have the group of the 6 that are trying to find, which is basically most of the main 6, other than Tremor.
All save Bane, the characters we care about.
Yeah. Exactly.
Because fuck Jeanette, seriously.
Yeah, really. Who cares? So they go through the portal thing. I love the comment here about Catman, where Tremor is saying something and Catman just sort of walks by and she makes some off like comment about him being hot or something. And Deadshot's like, I'm not saying a word, lady. But I noticed he didn't do that back when he was a big tub of lard, neither. So, making a comment about Catman being much more physically fit than he used to be. And then they fight a big piranha octopus thing.
Cool.
So, yeah. But otherwise, there's lots of good dialogue. Lots of the good Secret Six stuff that we're typically used to.
I think that's probably the highlight out of this issue, to be honest, because it's kind of just like two fight scenes and a load of otherwise really snappy dialogue in between.
Yeah, and there's no way to get between that. But man, when the two teams start fighting, they're really kicking each other's ass. They and I won't give away the end. You've got to read that. So
yeah, because that's like, could they really do that? Will they? No way. Maybe. Could it?
Maybe. I don't know.
Yes, they will. They got to sell comics.
I don't know. But yeah, I mean,
I don't know what they're doing.
Yeah. I don't want to say anymore because, again, the best part of the issue is the dialogue and then that ending. So there you go. Secret Six. Check that out. All right. It is your turn then, McFeely.
Well, I got a lot of stuff, so I'm just picking out a choice few.
I bet you got Avengers Academy, don't you?
I do got that.
Hey.
Sweet.
But if I only talk about one comic this week above all others, it will be Taskmaster issue number 2. And you may recall, I talked about Taskmaster number 1 last time, and I really enjoyed Taskmaster number 1. But Taskmaster number 2 is, without hyperbole, the funniest goddamn comic I have read since Dan Slott stopped writing She-Hulk.
Wow, that's a lot of praise there.
Yeah.
Because I laughed my butt off at some of them She-Hulk issues.
Yeah, She-Hulk was awesome.
Yeah.
Yes, but this issue begins, it's narrated by Mercedes, the waitress, who accidentally wound up in the whole Taskmaster, the Taskmaster's mess from last issue. If we don't recall the plot is that the Taskmaster has had a bounty placed on his head by the mysterious organization and or person known as the Org, claiming that he's turned state's evidence now that Captain America is in charge. He hasn't, it's a lie, but the Taskmaster doesn't know why the Org has turned on him, because, as we learned last issue, when we learned about the Taskmaster's memory rooms and the way he organizes information and skills so that they're recallable inside her head, they've rewritten and overwritten everything else that's in his mind. He has no memory of himself beyond a certain point. And now he's on a cross-world tour to try and figure out why this is happening.
Like XV.
Well, this issue begins in the middle of the action, where they are fleeing on a bus, being chased by a group of Mexican skull-faced mercenaries wearing.
That sounds
more
like me.
real day of the Dead, Grim Fandango looking masks.
Are they luchadors?
No, they are not luchadors.
El Día de los Muertos.
If they were luchadors, I'd be buying this book.
No, you'll be buying it after you hear the rest of this.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
And the Taskmaster duels on the top of a bus with their leader, the Dawn, D-O-N, of the Dead.
Oh, my God.
And I'm talking full-on big flappy black coat, sombrero, and cutlass with a red sash and a skull mask here. And phonetic dialogue. As he bounds onto the roof of the bus, he bellows, "I saw jumping beans into Jew privates!"
Wow.
And then he launches into a fencing match with the Taskmaster with the battle cry of, "I killed your face!" And of course, the Taskmaster brings him down, punches the mask off. And the Dawn looks up in terror. We don't see the face, you know. And he screams as the Taskmaster reacts in horror. "Don't you look at me!" And then we cut back in time to show how we wind up here. The Taskmaster and Mercedes have hijacked a rapper's plane. The Taskmaster quickly has her look up the landing process on YouTube so he can set the plane down safely, you know, stuff like that. He just learns the skills on the fly like that. We get a flashback that shows that shows how he lived his life when he was on the mercenary circuit, just wandering in a city when suddenly he finds he doesn't know where he is or what he's supposed to be doing there. How subconscious ideas would draw him to phones and he would key in numbers he didn't know that his brain didn't know, but that his hands did, and he would get the messages for where to be and when. It's some really good... I mean, overall, before I go any further, because the next scene is when they land and meet the Dawn, this is friggin' funny. But like the best She-Hulk stuff, it still tells a great story that is full of character and really expands the universe and of the character and their personalities and the story of the miniseries. With stuff like that and what is to come as well. But I mean, they land... and they are surrounded by guns as soon as they step off the plane, but the Dawn of the Dead emerges and tells his men to put the guns away and welcomes his old friend, the Taskmaster, you know, who has heard of the bounty but won't turn him in. And he guides him through his camp telling him about all of the crystal meth that he's running. You know, real cartel stuff, real cartel and federales stuff, real stereotypical Mexican crime. And he talks about how the federales want to keep the DAA aid money flowing through the American teat. They hound me, my operation, like feral dogs. They turn good men into rats. And he turns on just the passing character. His name is Rodrigo, and just shoots him right in the head, you know. You are seen leaving the Federale station in downtown Morila. No, no, just shut July Hall. And he just kills him dead. Which is not particularly funny. But it's when one of the other mercenaries comes up and says something to him calmly about the man he's just killed, and he drops to his knees, throws his hands up in the air and screams, "No!" And the taskmaster wants to know what's wrong. And the Don quite calmly explains that Rodrigo, he played the 1987 DG20 Casio electric guitar in me band.
What?
He played the 1987 DG20 Casio electric guitar in my band.
That's with what the
Narco Corridos songs immortalizing my exports. How can I maintain the love of the peasants without them? And then Mercedes leans over and asks the Taskmaster, "Why is everyone you know completely insane?" And the Taskmaster responds, "I don't remember."
So wait a minute. The Taskmaster comic is basically just full of jokes and stuff. He's not like being badass.
The first one wasn't.
The first one wasn't, but the second one is.
There were some jokes in the first one, and
but
he
not
was
to this level.
This one is very funny and full of badass. Because, I mean, he takes a moment to go off and look through the camp and finds the statue of, what's the Santa Muerte, you know, the saint of death, who the cartels worship. That's a real thing. And he remembers that the first job he ever did was training the Don's men. And to show solidarity with them, he took the Santa Muerte's face. That's why the Taskmaster wears a skull mask.
Oh, wow.
Huh.
Yeah, cool stuff like that. Of course, then he's called outside, and it turns out that the Dawn of the Dead is double-crossing him, and he's going to turn Mercedes. He won't turn the Taskmaster in, but he will turn Mercedes in, because he's got a man's got to live, you know. And of course, so the Taskmaster offers to take the place of Rodrigo in his band in exchange for their freedom.
Oh my God!
I hear you're down one guitarist. Espera. You can play the DG20 Casio electric guitar, set to electric mandolin and drums. You give me 20 minutes in a YouTube search, I'm a quick study. Turn stage and full-on mariachi action.
So, oh my God, YouTube has to be like his secret power now, because he can literally learn everything, can't he?
That's awesome.
That's fantastic. So,
are they trying to make him like the new Deadpool or something? I mean...
Taskmaster? No, you know what this is like if you're going to compare it to Deadpool? This is like good Joe Kelly Deadpool, when it wasn't just about jokes and there was actually some depth to the character and his world.
Yeah.
Ridiculous things happened, but there was a darker undertone to it, and the ridiculousness served only as a distraction from the much darker things that were plaguing the character at the time. That's exactly what this is.
And, wow, that sounds good.
and that is without even that is actually skirting around. There is a fantastic punchline to the whole issue. Whenever we cut back to the present, that I am not going to spoil because you have to read it. I was on the floor, and it also expands more on Mercedes and how things may not be what they seem, and how her being there may not be an accident after all. So you see, I mean, as much as I focused on the jokes there is really good story in there as well. It's as I say, it's like the best She-Hulk stuff, and I hadn't really thought of the Deadpool comparison before, but I've been thinking about how much better old Deadpool was recently, so that's put the two things together in my head. Yes, it is well funny, but there is a good story with strong character work that really builds, uses, like Dyke Downslot She-Hulk did, uses continuity as its tool to build a bigger story around the character. Without, you know, building upon it, without feeling stonewalled by it, not using it as a weapon or seeing it as an obstruction, as some characters do. This is what the Dan Slotts and the Fred Van Lents and the Jeff Parkers of the world do. And that is what you should read their comics. Taskmaster, cool. The funniest comic since Dan Slott's She-Hulk.
Who's
the Dawn of the Dead is... It is Fred Van Lent.
Okay, all right.
And, the funniest comic I've read since Dan Slott's She-Hulk. I can't expect the next issue will be as funny, but the sting line for the next issue is, a village of Hitlers? So we may go somewhere.
Wow.
Awesome.
Yes.
So it's got to be a village that the hate monger founded, right?
Maybe.
I hope so.
Zola, maybe.
Shoot, that'd be awesome.
Populated by clones of Hitler.
Maybe I need to buy that.
I would strongly recommend it. You know, I enjoyed the first issue. There was some snappy dialogue and lots of general taskmastery badass action that I was expecting. I never expected to get as many belly laughs out of this issue of Taskmaster as I did.
I just love that YouTube thing that, you know, he can now just YouTube anything and know anything. That's just awesome.
Watches it and copies it. There's a quote on here from IGN on the cover. Simple and straight to the point, this is why I read comic books. And while I certainly wouldn't want every comic book to be a Taskmaster...
Or to have an IGN quote on the cover. Or to have an IGN quote on the cover.
Or that, indeed. Mind you, Avengers Academy has an Ain't It Cool News quote on the cover.
Just but, as good.
But definitely, yeah, give Taskmaster a try, folks. Absolutely. Well worth looking at. Something else that's well worth looking at is S.H.I.E.L.D. number 4, which is out this week. I don't remember if I talked about the third issue of S.H.I.E.L.D. or not, but that was two months ago, so... Basically, what we discovered last issue is that Isaac Newton, leader of S.H.I.E.L.D., is an evil immortal mastermind who keeps Nostradamus locked up in his basement and uses his prophecies to shape the world.
You just made that up on the spot, didn't you?
I wish I did, but that's actually what happens.
I don't believe you.
Well, you are wrong. That is the plot of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Sweet.
Awesome. Actually, the last issue was covering the life of Newton. So this issue picks up from where we were in issue 2 with Leonardo da Vinci appearing before the assembled Brotherhood of S.H.I.E.L.D. having transcended time in his steam-powered mechanical fight suit.
For God's sakes, has S.H.I.E.L.D. been around since, like, you know, Neanderthals or cavemen or something?
Egyptian
okay.
times, according to the first issue.
Like, with the first...
Yep,
the first person made
turned,
fire, you know, and then he began S.H.I.E.L.D. You know?
Imhotep turned back a brood invasion, and everybody rallied under him, and the shield he wore had the symbol of the hawk on it, like S.H.I.E.L.D.'s insignia, and that's where S.H.I.E.L.D. began.
Fantastic.
But Newton is not overly happy to see Leonardo, because it throws whatever his evil plans are. Into disarray, and Leonardo presents a small golden orb called the Human Machine to the whole assembled masses. Newton orders everybody out except him and Newton, and he realizes that it really is Leonardo, and they're not seeing eye to eye, but Leonardo is going to be our brooding hero of this, I think, and he heads up to the roof of the building. Who's breathing so heavily?
Probably me.
JD, calm down.
Leonardo bids farewell to Leonid, who's our young protagonist, who has been brought into S.H.I.E.L.D. as of the first issue, and heads off on his giant bat-winged steam-powered spacesuit to travel to the sun. And then we get the really interesting stuff, the stuff that really catches my eye about the issue. This issue in particular, is the number of little nods it has to things that it doesn't otherwise need to, and things that would otherwise be very forgettable. Because we cut back in time, basically S.H.I.E.L.D. is often structured around flashbacks to older times. We cut back to 114 AD in Japan, when we've met him before, Zhang Hen, who we know charmed a celestial out of destroying the planet with the beauty of his poetry.
Is Grant Morrison writing S.H.I.E.L.D.?
It is very Morrison-y, isn't it? But it's Jonathan Hickman.
Oh, I need to read it then.
Yes, you do. I've exposed the values of this thing. So why aren't you reading it already?
I mean, it sounds like, what is it, Seven Soldiers with all the crazy stuff that's going on in it?
Well, this one features Zhang Hen is at the peak of this, of his miles-high pagoda that he built to talk with the Celestial, which is just floating in the lotus position over his palace. And the thing that the two things basically on this page is, one, this Celestial is speaking in the broken dialogue that the Celestial spoke with in the immediately cancelled Eternal series of last year, which you may or may not remember even existed.
Was that the John Romita Jr. book?
No, see, I can't remember if the Celestials talked that way in it, but it was a series by Daniel Knopf. Was it the two Knopfs? Daniel and Charles Knopf? They did the HBO series Carnival. They did this Eternal series anyway. It only lasted 9 issues. It was gone. It was waited far too long to chase up on the... it did follow on from the Gaiman and John Romita Jr. series, but...
Yeah, that's the only one I remember. Yeah,
but basically, okay. The way the Sentinels talked in that was like every couple of words in their dialogue would be within parentheses and a selection of different. Because it was, the idea was that their lexicon was so broad, or their language, it wouldn't translate all the way. So various potential meanings of words that they spoke were put forward. Man, a choice, decision, sacrifice must be made at the center of this planet world. Like many, many others, lies a dormant Celestial egg embryo. So we're going back to Earth-X stuff with that as well. Earth, I mean, I was really shocked when I read that.
Yeah.
I try to forget Earth-X.
Hmm?
I try to forget it, that it happened.
Oh, I still enjoy it. I enjoyed Earth-X. Earth-X was good. There's the follow-ups that weren't so good.
Yeah.
They get really weird.
They are weird, yeah, very weird. They're like, Mephisto was Nightcrawler, and also it was Belasco, and he was, and Colossus was Mr. Sinister, and.
Yeah, it got really weird.
Yeah. But, so, this is a Celestial talking about the plot of Earth-X in the dialogue from a 9-issue Eternal series from 2 years ago. So I was rather impressed just with that, because those are completely unnecessary. But, this Celestial, the Zhang Hen proposes that they'll protect the egg, but the Celestial explains that's not the point right now. That's how Celestials are born, but she's done something forbidden. She's pregnant. Somehow, some way, she is with child, and she will be destroyed by the birth, but she accepts that, but she needs nourishment to begin it now. And she's asking Zhang Hen to make the choice. She will consume the earth and destroy everybody now, or she will destroy the moon and they can suffer through the chaos that follows. So, you know, Zhang Hen, it's a quick extinction or a little bit longer at life, but otherwise horrible. But Zhang Hen comes up with a third alternative, and then we cut back to Leonardo. And we find out that the Celestial placed itself in the sun to constantly feed upon the energies that are constantly brewing out of the sun. And Leonardo arrives just in time to midwife the birth of a Celestial fetus. I mean, come on! How freaking awesome is that?
That doesn't sound anything like what I think should... would normally be. I expect super spies and like LMDs and like, you know, saving the president. I don't expect what you just described.
Oh, this was not what anybody could have expected. But then, just to make sure that they haven't, so that we don't completely forget that that's what we're looking at, on the very next page, Leonid finds Nostradamus beneath S.H.I.E.L.D. following Leonardo's directions, finds Nostradamus and asks him how long he's been here. Then we get a flashback, and we see that Newton has kept him alive for hundreds of years using the, I guess it's basically the Philosopher's Stone, you know, Panacea, the elixir of life. And he says, we have different names for it here, according to levels of potency. The Forever Compound, the Second Substance, the Infinity Formula, which is the thing that keeps Nick Fury alive. Once again, another great little nod that they wouldn't need to have bothered to do, but it's like, hey, homework, hey, broader universe, hey, how you doing there? You're awesome. I love you, Jonathan Hickman. And when Nostradamus refuses to give him the prophecy that he needs, Newton injects him with it and simply says, "Then I will wait." And Nostradamus has been here all along. But we learn again through another flashback. It's very multilinear, very flashback, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Loads of different time periods. That he was told by a glowing figure, an unidentified man who came from sometime in the future, that this would all happen to him. And that he would have to endure it because Leonid would come and save him. And he's free now. And shit looks like it's about to go down. And this issue contains in the back of it, as many of Hickman's issues of Secret Warriors have done, just strange little supplemental pages that don't really have any text on them, but are like Leonardo da Vinci-esque illustrations and patterns and symbology. And it looks like there's going to be some connection between the celestial child, which is being called the fetus of God, and the human machine. And I have to say, S.H.I.E.L.D. just, you know, if I'm being fair, a lot of S.H.I.E.L.D. thus far has felt very much like setup with no great idea of where on earth it could be possibly going, simply because of how bizarre so many of the ideas are behind it. But goddamn, the high concepts in this thing are enough to keep me entertained, even if it does come out only once every 2 months. I wasn't sure. I really enjoyed the first issue. I enjoyed the second. The third was interesting with Isaac Newton, master criminal from beyond the wall of time.
Sweet!
But this fourth issue was like blew my freaking mind with the high concepts, and as well as really pushing my continuity buttons with all of the little references to Earth-X, Eternals, the Infinity Formula. And yeah, I have not fallen out of love with this yet. I still strongly recommend. And it's Hickman, you know. Everybody knows I love Hickman.
Is this a monthly or is this just
bi-monthly? Bi-monthly. There is no set number. It is finite.
Oh, so it's gonna end at some point.
At some point, in the same way that Hickman's Secret Warriors is going to end. We know now that Hickman's Secret Warriors is going to run to 27, 28 issues. We don't know how long S.H.I.E.L.D. is. I have a feeling it's smaller term than that. It's hard to say, honestly.
Because I've missed so many issues, and I kind of want to read it, but if it's like a mini or something, I want to get a trade. Because I do want to read it, because it sounds awesome. But I don't want to jump in now because I feel like, oh, God, I am so lost.
Well, see, track down some of the other issues. I know some of them went to additional printing, so you might still be able to get a hold of them.
I wanted to jump on it. It was the first issue, but my comic shop never got the first issue. I don't Worthless even think they got the reprints. Fools. Yeah, they didn't even get the reprints. It was crazy.
Put an order in.
Mm.
Well, if you can, I definitely recommend it. And I also have I've got quite a few things, and wow, I picked out some things I was going to talk about and wasn't going to talk about, and I've looked at the other things, and I've saw the other things are all Hickman. I love the Hickman. And Avengers Academy, which continues to be really good, though I must say, I don't know, this issue is about Stryker, he's our final new character, and we learn his past, and he is... the son of a woman who has driven him to be famous. You know, she was a dirty whore who made her way in life and made her name by sleeping with famous men. You know, a real Heather McCartney of a woman. No, that's...
I have no idea who that is, but I love how you say whore.
Yes.
Wow.
No, whore. Yes, well, anyway.
That's so awesome.
We don't know who is that. She obviously has some idea of where his powers come from. He doesn't know. She doesn't want to tell him. And we get the story of his life, essentially. And there's not too much I can say about this. It's not quite as good as the last couple of issues, but a below average issue of Avengers Academy is still better than a hell of a lot of other comics. And suffice it to say, without giving anything away, this is another one of those issues where... If you're going to have a series where the conceit is your central characters might go bad, it's always really good whenever one of them throws up the possibility that they genuinely will. And that's all I'm going to say without spoiling Avengers Academy.
Hmm.
But I may turn my attention to more Hickman. with Ultimate Thor number one, which I was begging up months ago whenever we first got word of it. And again, actually, this one is all up and down time. Not by nature of its plot, but just that we open with an attack on Asgard that may or may not be Ragnarok as the World Tree burns and Thor and several other Asgardian face off an invasion by what appear to be Nazi soldiers and frost giants.
That sounds wow. So awesome.
Okay. Strong start, wouldn't you say? Then we cut to, I mean, it says in true Jeff Loeb style, no, for the next segment, but I don't believe it is now, because it's set during the time when Thor was being in Brussels, and is following on from the Ultimates 2 revelations, of course, that Thor was believed to be a product of the European Super Soldier program. And we meet Ultimate Dawn Blake, who is called in to try and decipher some of the strange Norse scribblings that Thor is scrawling on the floor of his holding room. And that's about all we learn there in the present day. Then we cut to 1939, where Baron Zemo appears and okays his mission to Norway so that he can use magic runestones to open a gate to the realm of the gods. I love Baron Zemo. And then we cut to eons ago in Asgard, whenever Loki and Thor and Baldur fight frost giants together. And that's about all that actually happens there. But Loki's a little concerned about how the attacks are growing stronger and stronger. And then we see that Odin is arranging for the forging of Mjolnir to repel these attacks. Then the issue ends with returning to Baron Zemo as he goes to, as in northern Germany to be precise, finds the rune stones, uses the things, and envisages a legion of SS regalia clad frost giants to serve as his warriors when they attack Asgard and humble the gods. And yeah. High concepts all the way from Jonathan Hickman once again. Now, I do have to be a little honest now, if I'm being honest, because I have to force myself to be honest when it comes to talking about Hickman, and say that maybe it's not as good as I was hoping it for, hoping it to be, because it is all, again, it's all very set up, and it's enough set up that I am desperately curious to see what happens next, because I love a bit of Baron Zemo. And I love a bit of Nazi occultism, and that sort of, because that's what we're looking at. Because you find that creeps up in stories and things. It's very Hellboyish, you know, Nazi occultism, mystical ways of winning the war, stuff like that. And maybe we'll find out exactly through this comic exactly how it is that Thor wound up in the here and now without his memory. I think that may be the direction they're moving in. That we will find out how Thor came to be on Earth without his memory, and what hand Loki had in it, and I'm interested to see what the heck we're doing with a Dawn Blake running around that's not Thor as well. So that's all thumbs up there. And I think I'll draw a line under it at that. I have other stuff here, but nothing that I could go on at length about. We'll draw a line under that, except to say that Secret Warriors 20, that was another Hickman book, and I, honest to God, no theatricality about it. I opened the book, and the first page said, 6 months later. And I was like, whoa, crap. Then I turned the page, and there was this ascending shot of a Hydra base. You see inside it, slowly pull out, turn the page. And it turns out it's in the Space Needle. And I was like, whoa, crap. And then you turn the page, and then Seattle explodes. And I was like, oh, crap.
Awesome.
Aloud, three times. Just punch, punch, punch. And that was how the issue started. Never mind what all else happened in it.
Wow.
I do enjoy a bit of Jonathan Hickman. I mean, Secret Warriors has been the one book of his that has done the least for me, but I'm always pleased whenever it prompts a reaction like that from me. And it sounds very scripted, but I genuinely just went, oh, dang, three times in a row as I opened the pages of the book. And that's my Jonathan Hickman love fest for this week. Tune in next time when I'll be sucking his cock some more.
Presented by Jonathan Hickman.
Oh, wow. So that leaves us with Brightest Day.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah. Very Blackest Night style cover, though.
Very Blackest Night style issue.
Yes, sort of is. So, we sort of pick right back up where we left off last time.
Deathstorm. Is that what he's called?
Yep.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Deathstorm.
I love the idea here that he's just calling himself that because he's all retarded and 90s.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, the fact that he's actually taking that name seems to be a joke. You know? Mm-hmm. How hardcore is that?
He's pretty awesome.
I'm Deathstorm.
He does look like an Image character.
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah.
Oh, yes. Yes, and he can apparently absorb lots of people because he got Stein in there, and later he picks up Jason's dad, so that's weird. So we finally get to see, or we didn't, no delay in getting to see the Aquaman Black Manta showdown.
Yeah, these are our two story threads for this issue.
Mm-hmm.
Deathstorm and Aquaman versus Black Manta.
As they start to fight, hey, Aquaman punches like a tree in half.
Yeah,
yeah, because he's Aquaman.
You know,
I do have to admit, I just read Brightest Day number 10 today, and I did really get a rush when Aquaman saved Blackwilad's dad. So that whatever we calling
awesome.
Him, that not was so awesome. I love that.
I was talking about in the last episode. You know, I was like, dude, it's on next issue. It's on like Donkey Kong, and here it is,
and
it's
really enjoyable
on too, in a minor symbol or two, but not unlike Donkey Kong.
Yes.
Oh, jeez. But we have Firestorm back in action, which is probably the better configuration considering the current power set, which is Ronnie at the helm and Jason pulling up the...
He's gonna make stuff.
Yeah. So it's basically just... I mean, it's pretty much every other page going back and forth between the two stories.
It is an extended fight scene. Two extended fight scenes.
I love that Deathstorm in this one sequence, just for one panel, pulls out a microphone.
Yes.
Like, it's so random. Like, what? But okay.
Oh, yeah, it is. I never saw it.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's kind of weird that given that this is just an extended fight scene for so much of the issue, that this is the issue where everything actually happens. You know, this is where we can definitely hold up our hands and say, okay, Brightest Day has really started now, one third of the way in.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, because, you know, now we've got, there's a lot of actual things happening, between the fights, there's those actual moments. We now have, like, a decent villain.
Yeah. Well, I mean, since Black Manta showed up, I've been waiting for Black Manta and Aquaman to just kind of throw down.
Now, Black Manta showed up at the end of issue one.
Yeah, I know. Since he showed up.
Yeah.
I've been waiting for this. This is what I've been waiting for.
Although, I have to point out that Aquaman ran away as a hitchhiker in a truck.
And the truck also hit Black Manta.
Yes.
In other words, fishes are time.
But you know what I mean? It's just kind of like, wow, that's heroic. They're driving away as hitchhikers.
There was no passing wheel.
Well, he's not in the ocean. He needs to be in the ocean.
He doesn't have an invisible jet.
Aquaman is at a disadvantage, and he still knocks that tree in half.
I'm just saying that I think it lends to the sadness of the character.
Yeah.
That the way that he gets away is by hitchhiking in a truck, in an 18-wheeler. Do you think Aquaman
Zinsky would approve of the king of a forgotten realm being dragged down and hanging around with the country folk?
Do you think Aquaman knows the rules of the road, a la Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back?
No, I don't know what those were.
No, I don't think he does.
The two listeners that are listening to this and know what that is are like, oh God.
Don't you just mean the two listeners that are listening to this?
Probably. Thanks, XB. I don't think it's time for you to talk yet. So. Jeez. We have like three listeners. So anyway, extended fight scene back and forth until we get to the very end-ish where Deathstorm picks up the White Lantern and corrupts it, apparently. Now, this voice, because we do hear a voice, it is not it's not a Black Lantern voice, but it's not a White Lantern voice either.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. I'm very interested.
It's not what's-his-name from Blackest Night? What was his name?
I thought Necron right away. That was what I thought at first.
That's what I was thinking.
But that's not what his voice bubbles look like.
It'd be blacker. This is somewhere between, you know, this is gray.
Yeah.
Is it the anti-monitor?
I guess it could be.
We only saw him for like one page or two
in
the whole story. He's out there, so yeah. I don't know.
So anyway, so now, okay. Here's the weird thing, though. Deathstorm, of course, creates a group of the 12 resurrected. But it doesn't seem to be that these are the same, because, of course, the other characters are doing things and they're not.
Yeah.
So it's not like they were summoned here.
No, they just created them almost from the substance of his own body, it would seem.
Mm-hmm.
So like constructs more so than.
And you get
that thing after all.
And you get that double page spread, you know, just like it was in Blackest Night when they all came back, except for its rise and everything's all dark looking and dead.
They're more silly,
full
faced than like the previous versions of themselves. So, but anyway, and hey, Aquaman finds a map to One-Eyed Willie's treasure. They're gonna go try to save their parents' restaurant. So anyway, or whatever they're gonna do, while they're riding in an 18-wheeler. But it doesn't have a trailer, so it's not even 18. It's just like the 6. But apparently, Martian Manhunter has no regards for satellites and things because he totally destroys like 4 of them on his way to Mars. In which we end with that amazing 2-page spread of the pyramid on Mars surrounded by a Black Lantern symbol forest.
Yeah.
Forest.
I say that's bad.
It's something going on.
I think I can definitely say that I called what forest he has to burn down.
Yeah. Yeah, he's not going to be happy about that. But yes, that is... that is probably going to have to be uprooted. So anyway, so good stuff. I mean,
yeah, good issue. I like it a lot.
No,
Brightest Day definitely on the way now. Took too long to get started, but it is started now, and I can definitely say I'm looking forward to seeing more.
I would say at the point that we're at, though, for the most part here, we're going to be back to Hawkman and Hawkgirl next time.
You're probably right. Certainly.
Can't they save that till the end and just say?
Wouldn't it be great if we worry about Deadman and Hawk and Hawkman?
Alive Man.
Alive.
We have a dead man that just showed up, but Alive Man's the other guy.
Yep.
Yeah.
I would say that the next issue is going to be Deadman and Hawkman and Hawkgirl. So we'll see if that carries on, but. Anyway, so there you go. Good stuff for that.
Where was Deadman last time we saw him?
They had done the cheeseburger thing, and then picked up... Lantern?
He was going to see somebody, wasn't he?
It was the Visions thing, I think, was the last thing.
Oh, yeah, he chatted to Aquaman about it.
When they did the whole Visions and
everything. Yeah, he's just
out there at the minute.
Yeah, he's just been hanging out.
Just as long as we don't get a whole issue dedicated to the Hulks.
So
oh God no.
God.
I used to want that, but now I don't.
What's going on? What up? Seriously. These are the two stories in this issue that I was the least bothered about at the very start. It's the best issue yet.
Yep.
It's Jeff Johns, it's Hawkman, it's Hawkgirl, and I don't want to see it happen.
What's wrong, with us? Yeah, what's wrong with this comic?
I miss Kendra. It's not the same. Sorry.
That's great. Okay, so finally, we're going to get there. It's time, finally, after like 2 weeks of delay. We are going to talk about...
It's only been out a week or two properly on DVD. That's the comics for this week, folks.
Yeah, so there you go. Comics. Now, XV, you're welcome to discuss with us Batman Superman Apocalypse.
It sucks.
Everybody, poke him with a stick. Wake him up. Poke him with a stick.
So. I just said I don't want to anymore.
You don't want to do it anymore?
We can definitely understand why not.
Yeah, really. Someone, please.
It's like time for me to go to bed. We've been here for like 2.5 hours.
Yeah. It sucked. It was bad.
Yeah, it was kind of bad.
It wasn't really that good, no.
This is based on the second story arc of Jeff Loeb, Batman and Superman comic. Following on from the last one, they made an animated movie, the first story arc, which was Public Enemies.
Which and it also is sucks. A sequel, even though they don't advertise it.
Yeah, it is.
Although not, it is actually a direct sequel to that movie.
Well, they made the reference with the Lex Luthor impeachment.
Well, I mean, like, you know, they don't really advertise it in, like, commercials or anything. They don't say, hey, it's a sequel, you know. Not that anyone would care, but still.
I don't think that would, I don't think that would help sales at all.
Yeah.
Well, the story of this involves Supergirl comes to Earth, Darkseid wants her for his female furies, and all of the important parts of the plot happen off screen.
Yes.
God freaking damn it. What the hell? So, first of all, they kill off Harbinger, which, when was the last time Harbinger even freaking mattered?
Crisis on Infinite Earth when she debuted.
And even then, she didn't really matter.
Yeah, she was integral to Crisis, sort of.
Okay.
Sort of.
But
the first thing of it, anyway.
But, I mean, they make the whole comment that, like, Kara had been on the island for 2 weeks... and apparently formed a friendship with Harbinger that we don't see. And
the thing, to be fair, the comic's the same way. It's like it just happens the next issue.
Excuse me.
You know, but then they kill the character off. And off screen, again, you know, like we say, mind you, that character dies off screen. Of which Kara doesn't even find out about it until way later.
Well, so that character dies off screen because it's part of the story because of the vision.
Yeah, to be fair, dying off screen is because you're supposed to think Kara's died.
You're supposed to think Kara's done, so that makes sense. I don't have a problem with that.
The flaws with this it's hard to really blame the movie for its flaws because they're all inherent in the source material. But as the Red Hood proved to us not so very long ago, it's possible to change that so it's better.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, God,
These storytelling gaps, the chiefly being, Kara spends time on Earth, learns the language, gets acclimated. Kara spends time on Paradise Island, forms a friendship with Harbinger, undergoes her training. Kara is kidnapped away to Apocalypse and brainwashed to become a female Fury. All of these things happened off screen because they happened in the periods of time between issues, which was using like the serial nature of comics and as part of the story. It worked to an extent in the comics because there was that
gap,
natural time gap.
Yeah.
Month on month. Because as a reader, you would assume that that time went by.
Yeah, well, you wouldn't necessarily, but it's using that to... It's a little bit clever. I'm sorry. I got caught in my throat there.
it's hard to say Jeff Loeb's clever.
He used to be.
The fact that the film still managed to squeeze in a fucking shopping montage instead of any montage of any of the other three empty areas in the story is just retarded.
I didn't understand. Yeah, I mean, they have the shopping montage, and then they could have
used that
time
any of the other things to patch up any of the other gaps in the story.
I understand that they're feeling confined by the source material, but
why pick it?
But I mean, why? You can pick it like we said, modify it, do stuff. You know what would have been more impactful and more interesting if they would have done it in the film is if Big Barda died. Like, if she would have died, like, you know, even though that they sort of introduced that concept that the character was just hanging out and trying to live a quiet life, and then she reactivates herself to help out and then dies in the process, like, that's impactful, that's interesting.
I guess.
She's just there in this story because she's got knockers. but it's the basis on which...
Well, it was Michael Turner. I mean, he had to have a lot of women.
That's true.
And that's the idea.
That is the basis for selecting the supporting cast of this bloody comic. There's no reason for Wonder Woman and the whole and the Amazons to be in it at all.
Except they all have breasts.
Like any innumerable
There's
other
no reason
members
for Harbinger to be in it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Harbinger, what the hell? If you're reading comics, all right. But I mean, in an animated film that's supposed to stand alone, Harbinger, really? You couldn't have replaced her with a nameless Amazon.
Yeah.
And that brings me to the next great issue with the thing, which, you know, I was never a big fan of Michael Turner. I love Ed McGuinness, but yes, have to admit, Michael Turner's art made the transition into stylized animation better than Ed McGuinness's did.
That's true.
Yeah, I think the animation was one of the positives of it. Yes. The animation in some scenes was pretty good.
It looks much nicer than Public Enemies. But it does contain most of the inherent flaws of Michael Turner animation. My brother and I were watching it, and my brother turned to me and he said, "What is going on with all the man's lips?"
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's what we at my comic shop call the blue steel. Or maybe it's Magnum.
Oh God!
But more to the point, all the women look the same. All of the women are the same.
Oh, I know.
Defy anybody who hasn't read the comic to have watched that movie and not wondered why Supergirl was waking up in a bed with a strange floating ball of vision in front of her face.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
I thought that was supposed to be Supergirl because they look exactly the same. And that factors into the plot later on, but it doesn't help from a narrative point of view or anything that's remotely bloody intelligent.
And Barda was just taller than Wonder Woman. Yeah. Otherwise, they look almost exactly the same.
Yeah.
Without armor, without the suits, there was, virtually no way to tell them apart.
But these are flaws that are inherent in Michael Turner's artwork and always were.
And even just the dialogue just wasn't there. I mean, in a lot of places, there's usually having Batman and Superman together. It's typically such a great opportunity to have good banter or dialogue between the two. And the best line in the whole thing is, "Oh, on a reporter's salary, right?"
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that line was the only really interesting bit of banter between the two.
And I don't think Loeb ever really went in for banter in the comics, though. All of the Batman and Superman juxtaposition that he did in the comics involved separate thought captions where it showed that they were thinking contradictory but really the same thing. Would they just make out already?
Now, don't hurt yourself by, doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know what the movie needed, which would have made it so much better?
Bad Zorro.
More Crypto.
Yeah, that's true.
More Crypto. Dude, Crypto would have been all over that movie. I'd have been all over that
movie. Yeah, that's true.
The Batman on jetpack thing.
I would also add Michael Ironside would have improved that movie.
Yes.
Oh, God, yes.
5,000-fold.
If there's ever been a voice that just did not fit in anything, animation-wise, it was that voice for Darkseid. I'm sorry. Yeah.
I was not even interested in that Darkseid.
There was just nothing threatening about it at all. Deep yeah. doesn't cut it, you know. Michael Ironside. Michael Ironside has the voice of a cartoon.
Yeah.
I saw him in Terminator Salvation, and I was like, he really talks like that. Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah.
yeah.
Couldn't believe
it. He's amazing. I love pretty much
Michael Ironside.
Well, you know, he's been Darkseid a lot less time than Conroy's been Batman, but to me, it's just set in there that he is Darkseid's voice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because he sounds so distinctive. Not even that long,
man. It's only by a couple of years.
Yeah. But still. Yeah, it... fail. Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what? Do you know what? It was still better than Public Enemies.
It was better.
Yeah, I liked it better than Public Enemies, yeah.
Yeah, Public Enemies
what
sucked.
What that says about Public Enemies, we leave that up to you, the discerning listener.
So do you,
my
do you,
God, I will not spend money on this.
So do you think that they'll actually, because the Batman and the Superman DVD sell, do you think they'll continue going on the Batman-Superman route? If so, you know, in about six more movies, we actually get to some decent stuff. Than Jeff Loeb yeah. and
well,
no,
even then, it's like even what Jeff Loeb proceeded to do with the book after this, nobody cares. It's those first two are the only ones anybody talks about because it's Ed McGuinness did one and Michael Turner did the other. What is the third volume? Could you actually tell me?
No, it's the fourth. It's the fourth or the fifth though that features the evil Batman and Superman, which is noteworthy.
The Bat-Zaro.
Yeah,
that stuff's really good.
And then there's the stuff with the Legion of Supervillains kidnapping them when they're young.
Yes.
You know what I'm talking about? You know, the villains from the Legion of Superhero, those guys.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
That's good stuff. Where they change history. Oh, God.
Yes, that's really good. That's what I'm talking about. That's actually what I was talking about. That's really good. Yeah,
that's
I can't see
awesome.
Them. I can't see them bothering to do any more in the style of this. Just following on to it.
Depends how well.
I do wish that they would just get away from doing Batman.
Depends how they sell.
And in general, but we know out of the next three movies we're getting, one's a Batman one and one's a Superman one.
Okay, so we're getting...
What is the next one that's coming out?
All-Star Superman, then Green Lantern Emerald Warriors, and then Batman Year One.
You know what we need? We need a new Batman Beyond movie.
Yes.
Well, Batman Beyond is getting a new ongoing series comic.
Yeah! Spinning off from the miniseries.
The animation.
They yeah, Batman Beyond was
that
great.
That wouldn't be bad.
Yeah.
No, that'd be great, probably.
So,
you know, if you want Batman Beyond, I hear it's on the Hub Network, which started
yes, it is.
Today.
Yes,
it is.
Presented by the Hub.
Presented by the Hub, yeah. Yeah.
And again, for the Transformers fans, G1 starts tomorrow.
And G.I. Joe.
And for anybody who likes like good stuff, Men in Black is going to be on too. Not that Batman Beyond and Transformers aren't necessarily good, but you know, Men in Black is just good by itself.
Fraggle Rock.
Fraggle Rock is on.
Oh yeah, that too.
Good stuff all around. I, however, have started to play EVE Online, so I'll be doing that.
Is that all we have to say about it?
Gandalf 2000, who is in the chat room, is a huge EVE Online fan, so you two should hook up.
Oh, no, it's one universe, which is kind of interesting. So,
okay, let me know when you've played it for a year and you've only gotten like an hour into the game because I hear it takes a while to get into that game.
So, and we'll see. We're on the free 14-day trial. We're shopping for a new MMO. So,
Before we leave, Superman Batman, did anybody get to see the Green Arrow short?
Yes.
They came accompany with it. Not my favorite short. I just thought it'd be worth mentioning that, you know, hey, you know, Green Arrow, and hey, Malcolm McDowell was in it.
Yeah, he was. Yeah. That was pretty good, actually. I have to say, it wasn't my favorite either, but it was good.
It was okay, but I don't think I've seen any of them that have been bad, but it wasn't like my favorite one. It was like no Spectre in the 70s grindhouse. That was awesome.
That was awesome. I suppose, yeah, the next thing we're technically getting then is the Superman Captain Marvel short slightly later this year.
And it's a collection of all the other shorts, too, in case people haven't been buying them.
Lovely.
Yeah.
They are good. They are consistent winners. We've only had three, but they've been consistent winners so far. So, yeah, but you know, don't spend money on Superman Batman Apocalypse. Don't.
Well, I don't want to actually say that. I don't want to say that because I want to keep making these.
Yeah, if we don't spend some money on them.
Somebody
it's a red box, right? Go spend a dollar on it. That'll be about enough.
Yeah,
somebody spent some money on it, but we're not saying that it's the best one.
It's really not. I mean, it's still better than Public Enemy.
Yeah, rent this one. Go buy Wonder Woman. There you go.
Wonder Woman.
Okay, yeah,
and if you like Darkseid, just check out Smallville this season. So there
God,
you go. If you do like Darkseid, maybe don't check out Smallville this season.
Yeah.
If you like Darkseid, go watch Superman the Animated Series.
Yeah.
There you go. There you go. Okay. Oh my God, this show was freaking huge. We got to get the hell out of here.
Are we going to talk about that Iron Man anime next
week? Next week, yes.
We'll do that for you, sir. We will have you on again to listen for 2.5 hours and then talk for 5 minutes about the thing. So there you go.
Excellent. I will get my other G2 collection out next weekend.
There you go. Anyway, that's us. That is Fanboy Versus the show. Listen at the end of the show and you get the website and all the cool stuff. We do have some prizes and contests running over at Radio Free Cybertron, so if you like Transformers and stuff, check that out. We also, and I will quickly note that we do have a phone number, right? A phone number that you can call, leave messages if you have questions, comments. Hey, you never know, we might play that on the show. Kilby, what's that phone number?
931-99-GOBOT.
931-99-GOBOT.
Yep.
Excellent. So call, leave us a message. You never know. We might play it on the show. So that's it. Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen, for joining us. And please tune in next week when it'll be Fanboy Versus...
This has been Fanboy Versus with your hosts, J.D. Church, Chris McFeely, Chris Triplett, and Brian Kilby. Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at tfradio for news and updates. Like the podcast? Leave us feedback on iTunes. Copyright 2010 Radio Free Cybertron.